Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome. Our show this week will focus on just what is involved in creating a good business plan, and goodness knows we all need that. If you are new to the online business world, this show is going to show you the five essential elements of an effective and actionable business and marketing plan. My guest today is Karma Spence Pottet, who has more than 20 years in marketing and public relations experience. She has worked on campaigns for organizations such as City of Hope, the City of Hope National Medical Center, and the Marine Mammal Center, and I know we've all heard of those. She helps authors, speakers, coaches, and other info service professionals develop and nurture a business they love through better marketing, branding, and a very strong and effective web presence. So, Karma, good morning, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do and where people can find you on the internet?
Sure. I have about, as you said, about 20 years of marketing public relations experience in both corporations and on my own. And I have niched myself to help authors, speakers, and coaches, as well as other info service professionals, really develop and nurture a strong web presence using such tools as WordPress to integrate blogs with social media, and also pooling their platform together through branding, marketing, and the web. And I can be found at WordPressRevamp.com.
Okay. I visited that site yesterday. You have a lot of information on there.
Thank you.
Now, when you talk about WordPress, I don't know if you know this or not, I am an ardent WordPress platform fan. You know, I'm not their biggest fan, but I'm certainly one of the most vocal about it. WordPress is very, very important. And as a web developer, over the years I have built more than my fair share of HTML websites. We still do, but largely for people who have a brick-and-mortar business, whose business is local geographically. Can you speak to why online entrepreneurs need WordPress?
Well, there are several reasons. One is that it is like a search engine magnet. I mean, I've had WordPress blogs and websites on Google before I've even added content, which has always amazed me, because when you first install WordPress, all it says is, "Hello world, welcome to WordPress," which seems kind of silly to get Googled, but it does. And the second most important reason is that most of the entrepreneurs that I work with are not all that computer savvy, and WordPress has a fairly low learning curve and really empowers them to take control of their own website so that they're not constantly dependent on a webmaster who will take their own sweet time to make the changes.
Right, right. And, you know, you're correct. I am actually building four in production this week, websites that are WordPress platform. They're not complete. They're already indexed.
Yeah.
For certain keywords, they're already showing up 1, 2, 3, and 4 in Google. Astonishing.
Yeah.
And they're not complete sites. So it's pretty amazing how quickly this happens. So once you have your client that and you've explained to them why they need WordPress, where do you go from there? I know you need to chat with them about the business and marketing plan, because truthfully WordPress lends itself to that. So where do you go from there?
Well, when it comes to actually doing the design of the website, I need to before I even start pulling it together, I really need to know what their goals are. And that's really where a business and marketing plan comes in handy, because if you don't know where you're going, how are you going to get there?
You can't see.
Yeah, and it's so easy to get lost. I mean, I understand that a lot of entrepreneurs suffer from ADD. And I don't even know why I use the word suffer, because it's not always suffering. I have ADD. It has its challenges, but it also has its perks. I mean, people with ADD are very, very creative, but we're also very distractible. And that's another reason why having at least the simple and easy-to-use business marketing plan that I've sort of cobbled together from all the different other methodologies has really helped me, because it keeps me on track so that whenever I feel like, oh, I've gotten lost, I go back to my little plan. And it's only like 3 pages long. And I can go back to it each time. I go, okay, yes, I am on target. No, I'm not. Or maybe my target has changed a little bit, so let me revise.
Exactly. So what are the 5 essential elements that you have to create a business and marketing plan?
The first is your vision. Then you're going to need a mission, and I will explain a little bit later what the difference between those are, because sometimes it can get confusing as to how they are different. You need objectives, strategies you're going to use to reach those objectives, and then finally you need an action plan that pulls the first 4 all together into a step-by-step plan of what you're going to do.
Okay.
So first, your vision. This is your big dream for your business. Basically, when you create your vision statement, you're creating a statement of what you want your business to be as if it already was that. And there's a simple formula you can use to create this vision statement. And it goes like this. First, you put in your business name, then the word provides, and then you provide a precise description of your target market, and then the word with, and then the specific type of product or service that you provide. And an example of this might be, Hamster Hattery provides passionate hamster owners with fashionable accessories for their pet hamsters. And as you can tell from that example, I have a sense of humor. And basically what this says is, number one, you know, Hamster Hattery, that's the name of the company. And who is their specific target market? It's passionate hamster owners. It's not just any old hamster owner. It's not people who just happen to have hamsters. It's people who really, really are into their pet hamsters. And what is it that Hamster Hattery provides those passionate hamster owners? And it's accessories for their pet hamsters. And it's not just ordinary accessories. It's not, you know, your run-of-the-mill leash. I don't even know if people use leashes with hamsters, but if they did, it wouldn't be just those.
Pets can use just about anything. You're a pet owner, me too. We do the craziest things with our pets.
So anyway, it's fashionable accessories. So you see how specific that is. And that's really important, because you need to have a very clear vision of where you want your business to be when it has matured. And you want to write it as if it already has matured. And that does 2 things. One, it really focuses you on where you want to go. And 2, it kind of activates the law of attraction so that your vision will become true because you have said it will become true. And you will attract that truth into your life. And the mission statement is similar, but it's more concrete. Your vision statement is usually not shared with your target market. It's something very personal and private, although some people have shared it with their target market. Your mission, though, is all about your target market. This is definitely something that you might share with your target market, and it answers these 3 key questions. What is your core purpose? Who is your target market? And what transformation do you offer? To go along with the Hamster Hattery example here, here's a sample mission statement. Hamster Hattery's mission is to create fun, fulfilling, and creative relationships between passionate pet owners and their hamsters by providing unique, fashionable accessories for their small, furry friends. Now, you'll notice that this mission statement uses a lot of the elements of the vision statement, but the focus is different. The focus is on really trying to convey the benefit, the transformation that you offer your target market. So basically, when these passionate hamster owners see this mission, they go, wow, that's me. That's what I want. I have got to do business with Hamster Hattery.
Mm-hmm.
Is that clear?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. So where does, in the middle of all this, I know a tagline has to take place somewhere in here, and so does an elevator pitch. So how do you work all that into your business plan or your mission statement? Because those are certainly very, very critical parts of your web presence.
Well, a tagline is sort of the short, pithy version of your mission statement. So it would just be something that really cuts to the chase, gets to the point. But it can all, now that's one type of tagline. So, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, but it would be, I guess it would be like Hamster Hattery, creating creative relationships. Or, you know.
I like that.
But
how many for a tagline, how many letters, words do you recommend? Because it has to be short and punchy, and it has to be very clear in what it's offering.
Yes, and I would say no more than 10, but probably ranging around 5 to 7.
Right, I agree.
But it could also be 3. I mean, I've seen ones that are, you know, like, here's the company name, and then it's a word, period, a word, period, a word, period.
Right. I've seen those, too. And if, you know, if they're using the correct words, they're very effective.
Yeah. Because basically a tagline, as I said, is your mission condensed into its most concentrated and clear form.
Right. Right. I agree. So that can be when you're advising people to create their mission statement, that can be kind of a subcategory of the mission statement.
Right. And there's also another type of tagline. And because sometimes the condensed mission doesn't really convey the feeling, the nuance, the ambiance that you want for your business. So sometimes it's just a real inspiring quote that somehow conveys that same message. For example, with my umbrella company, Dragonwise Solutions, my tagline is, if you don't inspire, you expire.
Oh, I like that.
And it doesn't really say, you know, this is what I provide, but it does convey the ambience of what I want my business to do. I want my business to inspire people, and I want my target market to be inspiring.
Right.
Because if you don't inspire, you get forgotten.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's actually a perfect tagline. I really, really like that. So when you're talking with a client and they struggle with the vision and the mission statements, and I know people do because I've run across this all the time, how do you help them kind of make that distinction between the vision and the mission? Because it can be very confusing to people who are new to the online world.
Oh, and even offline as well. I mean, I've struggled with those two. In fact, it took me probably about 2 years to really get to the point where I was able to explain it as I did just a moment ago, because it really confused me. And what I've done with some clients is I walk them through like these sort of like vision, meditation type, visualization, that's the word I'm looking at. I walk them through visualizations. I walk them through their big dream of what they want their business to do, what it smells like, what it sounds like, what it feels like, what textures it has, what personalities it has. And once they get that really large picture, then we look at everything they've pulled together and look for trends. Is there something that keeps repeating itself over and over and over again? And if we are able to find that, that's usually the vision. And from the vision, you grow a more specific mission.
So you're teaching them to live in it.
Yes.
Okay. And see, that makes perfect sense to somebody like me. So once they get past that, you know, that kind of mental block where, you know, they're being very, very careful about putting everything on paper and they're being, you know, very linear in their thinking, sometimes you have to pull people out of that. And once they start actually living their vision, I would imagine that things just flow very smoothly after that.
For the most part. Sometimes people get blocked. It's kind of like whenever you're creating a new habit or like a New Year's resolution where, you know, the first few weeks, woo, you're doing great, you're doing great, and then suddenly you just get tired and you go back to your old ways. So that's basically where the rest of the business plan can really help.
Okay.
So, you know,
go ahead.
So.
Well, so basically at that point, then you're starting to look for their objectives and how they're going to pull all this together.
Yes. And your objectives, really, you need to think about what are your objectives for the first year, for the next 5 years. And if you're really, I mean, those are really the most important for your simple, effective. But some people also like to think of their big goals for the next 10 years. And basically, you lay, okay, this is what I want to accomplish in year one. Those are your, and you want to come up with no more than seven or nine objectives, because if you get too many, it gets overwhelming and you won't accomplish them, and then you'll just feel bad about yourself. In fact, I recommend focusing on three primary objectives, especially in the first year, no more than three. And in a 5 year, you can bump that up to 5 to 7. And you want to keep them to that smaller number just because you want to have a sense of accomplishment at the end of the year. You don't want to look back and go, oh, I only hit one of my nine. If you hit one of your three, that's, you know, you're one third there. But if you're one of nine, you know, that can really, you know, make you throw the whole mission plan out and maybe even give up and go get a day job, you know, and you don't want to do that.
No, you really want to live your dream. So what are the best types of objectives? I mean, can you give us some examples?
Yes, I can. They basically need to be, and this is not new to me, this has been taught by a lot of people, they need to be SMART, which is an acronym for specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timed. So basically your objectives need to be specific. They need to be precise. You don't want to say, I want to make a lot of money. You want to say, I want to make $6,532 in 3 months. Yeah, it's like it's very, very specific. Even six figures in 1 year is not specific enough, because is it 100,000, 300,000, 600,000? There's a big gap there. You want to be very specific. Measurable, it needs to be something that you can measure. You can say, yes, I've reached that goal. Again, like if you said, I want to be six figures, the only way you'd measure that is if you reached 100,000. But did you really meet your objective? That's why you need it to be specific. And you need it to be attainable. Now, attainable doesn't necessarily mean, oh, I know I can do this. And to some degree it does, but you want to stretch yourself a little bit too. So, for example, say you are used to making $100 an hour, and your goal is to make $500 an hour. How does your mind accept that you can make that five times your current hourly rate jump? Do you believe on a core level that that's attainable? Now, if you believe on a core level that you can only make $300 an hour, maybe your goal should be $400 an hour, and you can go to the $500 later. You want it to be just a little bit beyond what you know in your core that you can do so that you can stretch. And that kind of goes with this one motto I've had all my life, is like, always aim for the stars. And if you only get to the planet, wow, that's pretty darn good.
True enough. And going back to the hour rate, some people will say, oh, well, you know, I made $500 in an hour. I did some coaching, or I built something, you know, a quick website. But they only do that one time.
Right.
And you have to say, no, I work 40 hours a week. Or if you're an entrepreneur, you probably work 80 hours a week. None of us work 40 hours, trust me, or less. But you need to really define how many hours you want to make this type of money, too.
Oh, yes, you definitely need, as I said, you know, before, it needs to be specific, and you need to really outline what your goal is on many different levels. And that, to continue on with the SMART, it needs to be realistic, which is similar to attainable, but it's more specific to your business. So, you know, maybe you want to charge $500 an hour, but realistically, with your current target market, that won't fly. So maybe one of your goals will be to sort of modify your target market, go after a target market that will help you raise that hourly limit. So you need to, like, so sometimes your objectives may not be your final objectives. They may not be what the stepping stone that makes you accomplish your vision, but they are something that is along the journey. And the final part of SMART is timed. It means you need to say, okay, I want to do this specific thing by this specific time. So here's just an example. And I'm going to continue with the hamster hattery because I've already started.
I'm a cat owner. I'm not sure how that would work here. But
yeah, probably not wise.
No.
Yeah. Create and implement a 5-part e-course by the end of third quarter explaining how to acclimate your hamster to fashion accessories. So you'll see it's very specific. You know, it's a 5-part e-course. And it's measurable. You'll know, okay, yes, I have written a 5-part e-course. It's not a 3-part. It's not a 2-part. It's 5 parts. It's attainable because by third quarter, if you're talking in first quarter or second quarter, you know, that gives you enough time. Now, if you're in near the end of third quarter and you're seeing end of third quarter, maybe that's not so attainable, but you get the picture. And it's realistic because writing a 5-part e-course isn't all that difficult. It can be done. And timed, you want it done by the end of third quarter. So that is a SMART goal, a SMART objective. And
I do have one question, though, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of people, and I run into this constantly, both with myself, although I am getting better, but with my clients, and I know that this is just a human condition, but we don't want to do something or launch something or put it out into the public until it's perfect. Karma, that never happens. It's never perfect.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you counsel people to just do it and tweak it as you go? Get it out there, launch it, get feedback, and tweak it as you keep on moving. So that's a huge problem with a lot of people who want to work on the Internet desperately. They keep thinking, I'll get this done, I'll get this done. Oh, it's not right. I'll do it next week. And they paralyze themselves.
Yeah, it's a nice little recipe for procrastination.
Yeah, it's analysis by, you know, paralysis by analysis. They just stop.
Yeah.
And I know you run into that in your practice. I know.
Oh, and speaking as a perfectionist, I have suffered from that malady lots of times.
I'm a recovering perfectionist. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. But, you know, one of my mentors, Adam Urbanski, says, you know, you just do it, it's good enough, and you can always fix it. And I can't think of the exact quote he does, but it's an amazing quote that's basically just get it out there. If it's worthwhile enough to get it out there in the first place, it's worthwhile doing it poorly to start. I think that's closer to what he says.
Right.
And basically
and that's
it.
The same thing. Yeah, you have to just do it.
And the
you
thing
really
is,
just have to do it.
Most entrepreneurs are an expert at something. That's why they're an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be perfect. By sharing your knowledge, and believe me, I'm the queen of not being perfect. It's like, I'm far from perfect, but at least, you know, I know something that other people don't know. And if I don't share that, in a way, I'm doing the world a disservice. So get it out there. Just get it out there, and people will appreciate that. And yes, there will be people who are going to say, you know what, you really needed a comma after that word, or you misspelled that, I'm going to unsubscribe from your list. And you know what? Who cares?
Yeah, I agree. Yes, I can. You know, we can't be everything to everybody, and I can't stress that enough.
Yeah.
We can help somebody, and that's just the goal. The goal here is to help somebody.
Yeah, and it's really
many,
the
maybe millions.
It's the information you're imparting, not necessarily how pretty it is. And believe me, I'm one of those people that needs to make everything pretty. That stopped me many times because I got to make it pretty.
Oh,
but
are you familiar with the Wayback Machine?
The Wayback Machine?
The Wayback Machine. This just horrifies me. You can, and because I am a recovering perfectionist, but you can actually go back and look at your original website in its very early incarnation, and it'll scare you to death. You're like, oh, I was so proud of that. Oh, my God. Just type in your URL into the Wayback Machine and see how far you've come. If you ever doubt how much you have learned during your journey, go to the Wayback Machine. It'll scare you to death, but it'll also make you go, oh, good for me.
Yeah, that's the funny thing is, though, I usually back up everything to CD, so I actually have all those incarnations somewhere in a CD in an archive.
Oh, I do too. But it's amazing. You can look at these things and just say, you know, it wasn't perfect then, it's not perfect now, and it's going to look completely different in another year. Let's just do it.
You know, and that kind of brings up this story from when I was, I think, in like the first or second grade. We had a assignment to write something. And so I wrote whatever it was I wrote, and I have a copy of it. We were supposed to pick out pictures from a magazine and then write a story about it. And I had pictures of little cats and dogs and houses or something, and I wrote this silly little story. And my teacher actually took a look at what I had to say and told me, oh, this was the fourth grade. My fourth grade teacher pulled me aside and said, Karma, you should be a writer. Now, I've looked back and seen what I wrote in the fourth grade. I have no idea what she was thinking in it. All I can think of is I must have been better than the other people in the fourth grade.
Oh.
So
you may have seen a spark of creativity that you're not seeing.
Yeah. So the thing is, everyone here, you may look at it and think, oh, my God, it's just fourth grade dribble. But to somebody else, that's going to be, you know, it's like, I think it's Kim Wilkerson says that every fourth grader is a god to the third graders,
mm-hmm.
or something
Isn't
to that effect.
Truth?
Yeah, and it's just, you know, you just get it out there. You know, it may not be the best that you can accomplish in 10 years, but it's just do the best that you can accomplish right now, and that will be good enough.
Well, and I think the entrepreneurial spirit really demands that each day we do something better than we did the day before. That's just how we think. It's in our DNA. I mean, none of us just kind of build something and coast on it and say, oh, that's good enough. We don't think like that. We don't sleep because we're thinking. We don't really take naps because we're thinking. We're always creating. And, yeah, we just actually enjoy it. We're not nuts. We really do enjoy what we're doing.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, that creativity is really what keeps us all going, puts our feet on the path, and keeps us going down that path. So did we finish with SMART? Or
Yes. I think we can move on.
I wrote that down. That is brilliant. So we kind
and
of
I didn't come up with it. I don't want to take credit for that.
I still love it. But you see, I hadn't heard of it.
Ah,
and
okay.
You see, there's always something, there's something new. There's something new to learn every day. So let's talk about strategies. I know we've talked about an action plan. How do strategies differ from the action plan?
Well, actually, strategies are what, when you take your strategies and your objectives, that's what helps create your action plan. Because strategies are just basically, these are the things, the techniques, the methods I'm going to use to accomplish my goals. That's all they are. So you might say, okay, the strategies I'm going to focus on are article marketing, pay-per-click advertising, and blogging. It's not saying what you're going to do with them or how you're going to do it. It just says, these are the strategies I'm going to focus on. And basically, a strategy is a method. It's a technique. It's something that you, it's a way of doing things that will move you towards your objective. Your action plan, on the other hand, is saying, I am going to do this in this way at this time and have it completed by this date.
Okay.
You see what the difference is?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So what do you think about accountability buddies? I'm coming across that a lot. You know, people will have these tremendously creative ideas. They'll have these great plans. They may even have a business model. For some reason, they don't do it. So what do you think about, and this is just an off-the-cuff question. I know we weren't going to chat about this, but I'm hearing an awful lot about accountability partners. What's your sense on that?
I think they're a very good idea, but it also depends on the people involved, because you have to choose the right accountability buddy. It has to be someone that you respect enough that, A, you're going to want to accomplish the stuff so they don't get mad at you. You know, and it's not real mad. You know, it's they don't wag their finger at you.
You want your gym partner not be waiting in the parking lot for you to show up. You know,
right. Yeah, you want someone that you respect enough that you don't want to let them down, but also someone that isn't going to be such a harsh taskmaster that you start not doing what you want to do, even if you want to do it, just because you want to get back at them.
Oh God.
And I know that's like this reverse psychology that I have seen happen, where you just you start hating your accountability buddy, because that it doesn't mean that that person is bad or wrong. It just means that they're probably wrong for you.
Right.
And it's just like, it's like choosing a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a marriage partner or a business partner. You know, you have to mesh together. You have to be able to work together in that role.
I'm seeing an awful lot of it, and I'm like you. I think it works if the synergy is there.
Yes.
I think if you have that partner that you really do admire, that you're willing to listen to and take criticism, as long as it's constructive criticism.
Yeah.
And, you know, take suggestions from, I mean, you may not veer from your vision, and God bless you if you don't, but you still may need somebody to point out the pitfalls if there are any. So it really has to be a strong mutual admiration society, I think.
Oh, definitely.
If you're going to work together. You can't have somebody that you just say, well, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, why am
right.
I on the phone with you then?
Right. So, and if you're doing
Go ahead.
If you're doing a co-accountability buddy, then you kind of want to be at the same level.
Right.
Because you don't want one person feeling superior to the other, because that could lead to resentment.
Oh, no, yeah, no question about it. So we've got the plan created, the action plan, the vision statement, the mission statement. We're working smart. So now what do? You've created your plan. What are the next steps?
Well, first I want to just identify the or define the action plan just a little bit more.
Okay.
An action plan needs to accomplish three things. The first is that it needs to break down your big goals into easy accomplished chunks. So like your objectives, these are your big goals. You know, like I want a 5-part e-course. Now that's when a goal is too big, you can get paralyzed just trying to achieve it. So what your action plan does is actually break it down into smaller steps so that your mind can get around each step, and then you can feel accomplishment as you reach toward that goal. The second thing it does is it gives you realistic deadlines, because when you're able to break them up into smaller steps, I mean, you might say, oh, I want to accomplish this 5-part e-course in a month. And then when you start breaking it down, you realize it's really going to take longer than a month, because each step, when you add them all together, takes up longer than a month. So your action plan actually helps you create those realistic deadlines for your objectives. And the action plan lays the groundwork for what we're going to talk about next, and that's your monitoring system. Because now that you've got it all laid out that you're going to accomplish X by Y date and A by B date and D by F date, you've got a way to monitor what you're doing. So what you want to do is, once you've got your little action plan, mine personally is 3 pages long. Some people are able to fit it into 2 pages, others 5. It really depends on how many objectives you have and how in-depth you've created your action plan. Because it's possible.
An entire journal.
Yeah. It could.
I kid you not, an entire journal.
I can totally get that. And the thing is, with your business plan, your action plan, it wants to chunk it, and you may want to chunk it even further on a separate place. You really want the action plan to be more granular than your objectives, but not necessarily so granular that it takes up a tome. Because you want it to be small and light. You don't want it to be something that you're like, oh, I have to lift that off my shelf and look at it. You want it to be something you can staple in the corner and quickly look at and then put down and know that you're moving ahead. So now monitoring your progress, you want to take a look at your business plan, probably just at least glance at it on a monthly basis. Take a look at it. Say, okay, have I made progress toward these goals? Have I started moving forward? And if you've seen that you haven't, then you want to ask yourself, why? Why have you not reached your goal? Is it because, A, your goal was really unrealistic when you thought it was realistic? Or is it because you've modified your goal and your original goal no longer suits your purpose? Now, if it's the first answer, then you just go ahead and you revise your realistic date. But if it's the second, then maybe you need to go back and refine your vision and your mission And so at least for the first year, you're probably going to be redoing that document over and over and over again, just because as you start living your vision, not only in your head, but in your life, you start realizing, oh, okay, well, I really wanted it to be a little bit this way, or I really wanted it to be a little bit that way. And it's sort of like growing into your vision and kind of like putting on a suit and realizing, well, the arms are a little too short. I need to lengthen it. And, okay, maybe I need to tuck it in here. And it's like taking it to a tailor and tailoring that suit so it finally suits you perfectly. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I'm actually taking notes while you're talking.
Okay. So, I mean, that first year, do not feel bad about yourself if you end up changing that document over and over and over again, because this is really you. I mean, the first time you're creating your overview, your outline, and then you tailor it during the first year. After that first year, usually the mission and vision doesn't change much at all, if at all. Your objectives, however, will change each year because you keep accomplishing them and need to come up with new ones. So I recommend, at least for the first year, at least glance at your action plan every month to kind of assess where you are. Once you start seeing a trend that you are now accomplishing everything on a regular basis, then you can go and look at it quarterly. And once you've passed the first year, then I think quarterly is good. That way you're never able to get too far off track before you're able to reel yourself in.
Now, how do you keep track of this? A lot of people have different systems. I have what I call living Word documents. They're constantly in flux. What do you suggest for people who just, they're list makers, they need to keep a list?
Like you just said, it really is a personal thing. I'm one of those people who I have lists, I have notes on my walls, I have a calendar. In fact, I have two calendars. I have a weekly and a monthly. And it depends, for me personally, it depends on the project which method I use. And so there is no one, this is the method to keep yourself on track. There's no such thing, because every person is unique and experiences the world in a unique way and therefore needs to monitor themselves in a way that works for them. I've found that to-do lists are great as long as you actually look at them. And some people like to do it completely on the computer. Some people like to print it out and have it written. One tip that I've found has been really helpful is if you've got a to-do list, people like to cross off what they've done, but there's something very negative about crossing something off. So one tip I got, and I've used it and it's awesome, is you take a highlighter and you highlight what you've done. This is a very positive action. It says, see, I did it. It's kind of like putting that little gold star on your paper when you got a good grade. And there's just something that's so, when I've looked at a to-do list that's got nothing but crossed out, and a to-do list that's nothing but highlighted, which one makes me feel better? It's the one that's highlighted.
Right.
It really means it's like, I did this.
I've heard that from somebody else before, so you're reinforcing what I've already learned from somebody. So
yeah. That
is a great tip. That's a great tip. In fact, Judy Peebles, a journaling genius, is the one who taught me that, but she does it with a pink highlighter, and I use green. I don't know why. I just...
I tend to use whatever color happens to be handy, but I am partial to pink for some reason.
Yeah, I think a lot of women are. It just makes us feel, fuzzy. I don't know what it is. We do you have any more on this particular topic? I have a question in the chat room I'd like to ask you.
Sure. I tend to do my lists both in the computer and then I print them out. And I like to do them in Excel for two reasons. One, if I change a due date, I can always just automatically sort, and it makes it really easy to add something and then just sort by due date. And two, Excel has a highlighting feature, so I can still use that highlighting tip. I can highlight it. In fact, I can highlight it in a wide range of colors, and I don't have to go out and buy a highlighter.
I know. Well, I have a client management software system that I use for my clients, and it has a lot of those features. I can actually book things on the calendar, so I don't miss their deadlines either. So, making these deadlines, I think, is very, very important, and I love your tips, so thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, one of the questions that I have in the chat room is, the question says, please talk about setting marketing and sales goals.
Okay. Well, the thing with marketing and sales is a lot of people think they are the same thing, and they aren't. And, in fact, I just read probably the – I've always struggled with how to explain why they're different. It's like I embody – I know what that they're different, but I've always had a hard time explaining it. And I just recently read, and I can't remember where I read it, but it basically said that marketing is what gets someone to want your product or service. Sales is what closes it. And unfortunately, in the real world, a lot of salespeople are being asked to do the marketing, and it really is a different skill set. Marketing is a relationship. Okay, I want to put this back. There are different ways to do marketing. My personal preference is relationship building. And I think in today's world, it really has to be, because people are getting...
In the online world, it has to be. They have to know you, trust you, recognize you.
Yes.
Really, that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
They have to know who you are. They're not going to buy from you if they don't know you, trust you, or have been referred to you. It's critical. That's marketing. I think that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah. It's building that relationship with a person so that they trust you with their money. They trust that you're going to provide them with value. So marketing is really communicating your value, building that relationship, and really basically getting that person, that target market person, that ideal client, to go, yes, you are the person I want to work with. You are the person I want to buy products from.
Mm-hmm.
Sales is, okay, here's my offer. And so they kind of blend, you see how they kind of blend one into the other, but they are distinct things. So you can have wonderful marketing, but still not get sales because your offer isn't right, your sales process isn't right, you've got a sales problem. And you're
not asking for the sale. That's a big one,
right,
too.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
You put out all this wonderful information, but you neglect to ask for the sale.
Oh, and I suffer from that one big time.
I don't anymore. I got over that one.
Yeah, I gotta get better at that one too. But or you could have a perfect sales process that once people see your offer, they buy it. But you don't get that many leads in because you've got a marketing problem. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm really answering this question about setting goals for marketing and sales yet. But I felt like you kind of need to understand what the difference is first. So, I guess a marketing goal would be to grow your leads in some way, some specific way. So maybe you want to build a list of avid readers of your blog who subscribe to your e-zine. That might be a marketing goal. And another marketing...
What is his marketing plan is right now.
Oh, okay.
See if that will help.
And another marketing goal might be to basically get the subscribers of your e-zine to be responsive. So, like, if you send a survey to your list, do they actually participate in it?
Right.
So
you need
that,
to determine how responsive your list actually is, and if they're
yes.
not responsive, you need
because
to
you could have a list.
Information.
You could have a list of 10,000 people and not get that many sales, where someone else has a list of only 200, and they're making a killing off of it because it's a very responsive list.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you hear that old saw, you know, the money's in the list, and it is, but most people interpret that as I've got to have a big list, and
right.
that's really not it. You need a responsive list, and that takes a little more finesse.
Well, that means that you really have to keep in touch with the people that really want to hear from you, and this goes back to what you were saying earlier. They really need to depend on your tips, your advice. I mean, you mentioned SMART, which I think is smart. I mean, I had not seen that. I thought I knew everything. Clearly, I didn't. So now, you know, I learned something new today. I'll pass that on to my clients. And, you know, this is just when people really understand that your role is to help them,
yeah.
then you have a responsive list. If they look at your emails or your e-zine or your tweets on Twitter, and you're just in their face selling, forget it. You are done. You're toast.
Yeah.
So there's a big, big difference, as Karma says, for this question in the chat room. Huge difference in my mind, as you know, marketing and sales are two different things. They do mesh up, they do intertwine. You do have to do both of them, but they're completely, totally different animals.
Yeah.
And you have to really understand what sales is and what marketing is. So the answer came back, says you're answering my question. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You know, and something you just said reminded me of an inspiring quote I want to share. I don't know if they have them anymore, but there were these postcards called pot shots. And they would just have these kind of, the first pot shot I have is my final decision is maybe, you know, they were all kind of, you know, biting little jokes. And one of them I like to put up because it reminds me that I will never know everything. And this pot shot said, there has been an alarming increase of things that I know nothing about. And, you know, it's really true because the more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
Exactly.
And that kind of has, that's a double-edged sword because, number one, it means you need to be open to learning new things and be okay with the fact that you're not going to know everything. And two, you need to not let that paralyze you because you do know something that someone else doesn't know.
And this is why you join groups, and this is why you have e-zines coming into your mailbox. Because honestly, and you will hear me say this if you ever hear me on a call, one thing that I know about online entrepreneurs is that we are very generous people.
Yeah.
We give away more than we actually earn, I think, sometimes. But we're here to help.
And yeah, and I've found the more successful the entrepreneur, the more likely they are to be very generous people.
That's exactly right.
It's the ones who struggle are the ones who are like clinging on to everything they have and want everybody to buy everything. It's like, you know, you got to give to get.
You really do. And once you start creating that core audience, whether it's a small list of 200 people, whether it's a fan base on Twitter, those people follow you. They ask questions. They refer you to people. I've had referrals from people I have never met or spoken to. But I'll have somebody email or call and say, well, so-and-so said that you're just the best in the industry. Well, I don't know who so-and-so is. And I'll tell them, I'm sorry, I don't even know who that is. But they will follow
me. But thank them for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you put me in touch with them? But they will follow you around. They really like what you're doing. They like what you're offering. And you build a loyal following. Let's just call it a fan base.
Yeah.
And that leads right back into your marketing.
Yes,
absolutely,
it does.
Absolutely leads back into your marketing. So you have to be very giving. You have to be very, you have to be busy. You have to be busy on the internet. You have to market yourself and your services all of the time.
Yeah.
But not in people's faces. You're not selling. You're marketing. You're letting people know what your skill sets are. You're asking what their skill sets are. You're actually engaging in online conversations. And I did an interview with Jack Humphrey recently, and he said something which I thought was brilliant. You're marketing all the time. You wake up, you're marketing. You go to sleep, you're marketing.
Yeah.
Basically, you are out there all of the time. Your name is out there. Your products are out there. Your services are out there. And people can see you with their peripheral vision. They're aware of you. They recognize you. You get that name recognition. And maybe a year later, oh, I need her services.
Yeah.
They go to you because they've already learned that your services and your reputation is, you know, spotless. And they're going to come to you because they know who you are.
Right.
And that's marketing, as I understand it.
You know, this kind of made me think of something. There's a lot of people, if they're mad at somebody, they'll write them and say, you know, oh, I don't like the way you did just something. But I get emails where people say, oh, I'm going to unsubscribe because of blah, blah, blah. And that hurts. Oh. It hurts. But those few emails I get from my fans, they're golden. I keep them. And so I would advise that if you really like what someone is doing, tell them. Don't think, oh, they're so big and mighty, they hear it all the time, because more than likely they don't.
That's absolutely true.
And by doing that, you can actually help them help you, because you say, oh, this is something you did that really helped me. Well, now they know, hey, that works. Mm-hmm. So now they might even actually put their hand out and help you a little bit more. So, I mean, that's just I'm not just saying, hey, if you like me, tell me you like me. I'm saying that for everybody. If you like anybody, tell them, because believe me, it will help you to do that.
Does
that make any sense?
It happens in my world all the time. And one thing about people, you know, you'll get a perception of somebody, let's say Joel Kalm, who's huge. Joel Kalm is huge. You know, Travis Greenlee, just a lot of people who market online, who have for many, many years, you think, oh, they are completely inaccessible. I can't possibly speak to them. Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
I mean, we online entrepreneurs, again, are the most generous people in the world. I mean, I know people will pick up the phone and say, Karma, I'm kind of embarrassed, but, you know, can I have 5 minutes of your time? And you do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, we always want to help people.
Yeah, and I tend to be a compulsive giver anyway. In fact, I've had people yell at me, Karma, you give too much. I'm like, I'm sorry.
My husband says that, you need to charge. I can't.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, it does come back. It really, again, it's a whole karma thing. The more you give, the more you get. It's true. My grandmother said it. I'm wiser people than she said it. It is true. The more you give, the more you get.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do help each other. So I hope that answered, you know, our chatting back and forth did answer the marketing and sales goals.
Right.
Back to the goals, though. There may be a question on that. How do you set up the sales goals? Because I don't think we really addressed that. I think we were heavier on marketing.
Right. Well, I mean, if sales goals, that there are different ways to do a sales goal. You can say, I want to make X number of dollars by a certain date, or you can say, I want to have X number of sales by X date. And the reason why those are different is, let's say you've got an affiliate program. You may need to make a lot more sales to reach a certain number goal because you're paying a commission than if you didn't have an affiliate program. So you kind of need to, what is your business model? What is your sales process? And what is a more realistic goal given your particular model and process? So sometimes it's better to have a number goal. You know, I want to sell 10 units by this date. And other times it just makes more sense to say, I want to have this amount of income by this date. And sometimes you need to set a sales goal that makes you a little bit uncomfortable. And I've said this earlier in the thing, is that sometimes you need to set goals that are just make you a little bit uncomfortable. And that's because it gets you to stretch. And I found, at least with a lot of the people that I work with, it's very common to be afraid to take that leap. And so that's one of the number one reasons why I say set a goal that's just a little bit of a stretch, not a big stretch, just a little bit of a stretch, so that you can start increasing your confidence in your ability to reach those goals. And so your goals will get bigger and more ambitious mm-hmm. as you start accomplishing them. But if you always set goals that didn't stretch you, how would you ever know that you could accomplish more?
Yeah, good point. So your goal, let's just say, okay, I'm going to do something utterly ridiculous, and I'm going to make $60 million this year.
That could happen, I suppose.
A lottery ticket? You know, that's, I mean, your business model should not be buying lottery tickets every
month. Yeah.
But you really do have to just, and I do, I set these goals. You have to set them because, as I said earlier, you can't hit a target you can't see. You just can't.
Right.
So you have to have something to aim at. You have to have some kind of accountability, whether it's
yeah.
you or whether it's, you know, a piece of paper on the wall that is highlighted with all of your accomplishments. Whatever it takes, you have to have something visual, I think, to make sure that you know that you've actually created these goals and hit these goals. I've had this conversation with friends and clients, like, oh, I go to bed at the end of the night, I've been busy all day long. For the life of me, I'm laying there trying to get my brain to shut down so I can sleep, and I don't know what I got accomplished today. That's the worst feeling in the world.
Oh, yeah,
so you
definitely
have to be able to, you know, quantify your results and make sure that you're really keeping track of what you actually got done. I think you'll find that you got far more done than you thought you did.
Oh, yeah. But also, I think your accountability needs to match your particular learning style.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a three learning, I don't know if you know this, but there's three learning styles. There's visual, audio, and kinesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending on what activates your brain more, is it, if seeing something activates your brain more, then definitely have a visual reminder of everything. But if an experience is what drives you more, maybe you'll want to have your goal in something that you can touch. So like maybe your goal is to win an award. Well, go out there and get a fake award and put it on your desk and say, this is my goal. I'm going to get an award. And so every time you want to get that goal firmly in your mind, you pick up that award and you pretend you're standing in front of an audience accepting it. And if you're, you know, I have no clue how an audio person, I guess it would be to record your goals on a cassette tape and listen to them every once in a while.
Yeah, I'm more audio than anything, audio and actually written. So I will have something going in the background and my speakers all the time.
You know, and it's, I'm a kinesthetic person. I need to be touching and experiencing things all the time. So right now I have a fuzzy koosh ball that every once in a while I pick up and I toss from hand to hand just because I like the way the little tiny little rubber things feel.
Yeah.
I named him. His name is Gunnar.
Oh, gosh.
Gunnar the fuzzy koosh ball.
There you go. Whatever it takes. Sometimes.
I know.
Well, do we have,
I told you I have a quirky sense of humor.
Well, I think we all do. We have to do what we do. We have to be funny and empathetic and funny and nuts.
Yeah.
To do the things that we do. But we have somebody in the chat on the switchboard that has her hand up. Let's see if we can get them on.
Okay.
Sometimes this works, sometimes it doesn't. This is Denise and Karma. Do you have a question? Hello? Like I said, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Is anybody there? Okay, well, I'm going to say no. All right, well, Karma, thank you so much for being here today. You gave some wonderful, wonderful information and some that I had never heard, which I'm fascinated with. The whole smart thing, I think, is just wonderful. Tell people again where they can go to find you on the Internet.
Well, my main website is WordPressRevamp.com. But also, if you want to have a little bit more information about what we talked about today, I have a free 5-part e-course. I guess I like 5-part e-courses. At PlanYourBusinessVision.com. And it goes over the topics that that we covered today, as well as a few more. And all the lessons are both written, and I also did an audio version of the lesson. So I hope that it helps people learn this stuff a little bit better.
Okay, give me that URL again. I'm putting it in the chat room.
It's planyourbusinessvision.com.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again. It's just been wonderful having you as a guest, and I hope you'll come back again one day soon.
I would love it.
Well, thank you.
All
well,
right.
Listen, everybody. I will look, I'm taking you up on that. So thank you, everybody, for being here. And the show is going to be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and Karma Spence-Pottet wishing you a wonderful weekend. And we'll see you next week. Thank you, everybody.